People talk and write about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life by fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life, I'm fighting in the fort of Dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, running, running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the, you know, this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. A very special program here tonight that I'd like to share with you. It's actually part of a longer show hosted by my good friend Charles Edward Lincoln. And it features some of the very interesting young women, or maybe not so young, women in the movement. These are white women worldwide. They're featuring Alison Chablot, the satirical singer from England, Avieli Horton, and Margaret Hofstetler, who I've known for many years, and with a special video appearance by Brooke Lauren Heimbach to discuss the roles and status of women in the alt-right and white nationalist movements. I think you'll find this very interesting. I'm going to be playing the first part of this for you now.
Hold on. Just a minute. But this time we're going to be talking about the role of women in the racially conscious movement. And, you know, part of the left agenda, of course, is to set men against women. And part of our agenda has to be to show that that's totally wrong. And in fact, we do represent the entire population, the entire white race. That's why we're here, is to preserve that. Margaret, how you doing?
I'm okay. I see those guns, but not on my proper stool. I'm sitting in a chair.
Okay, you look wonderful. You look absolutely wonderful. But let's see, how's the sound? How's the sound to you?
This is what you need.
How does the sound sound to you?
Sounds fine.
Okay, well, we're just getting started and waiting for VLA and a few other people to show up. But why don't you start and just, I mean, this is not the sort of thing we usually talk about, but what do you think, is there any special role or special problem that women have as part of the conservative wing in politics, and particularly the so-called alt-right or racially conscious movements. Have you personally had any difficulties or negative experience as a result of being a woman?
I don't think I have personally.
Of Highway 407?
No, I'm such a marginal figure in a way. But of course, you know, one of the really sort of noxious things is that whole Andrew Anglin movement of women are trash, basically. I think there should be more compassion for the situation of women who've gone through this whole system.
Which system? I mean, tell me what you mean.
System and the cultural brainwashing. I was thinking recently about the fact that if the way they start sex education so early in school, etc., children have no chance to, unless they get a really strong home education, you know, home culture, they have no way of even understanding what sex is about, that it's actually about reproducing the race and building a society. As far as they know, sex is all about pleasure on one hand and protecting gay rights on the other hand, and going for more and more extreme forms of sexual expression. You know, that's got nothing to do with the real role of sex, which is reproducing the species. And I just think that's such an extreme reversal of reality that how can anybody survive? I'm amazed that anybody grows up with their head on straight.
Well, I mean, clearly a lot of people don't. I mean, Joe Biden is running for president, is being taken as a serious candidate, and you know, the things that have happened are indeed very strange, but. What contacts have you had with? I mean, you mentioned Andrew Anglin, of course. He's a very significant figure in the so-called alt-right racially conscious movement. He's the editor of Daily Stormer. As it happens, I was once asked for help by an ex-girlfriend of hers, and I'm not going to tell a single detail beyond that, but. I was just wondering, what is your perspective on him, and what you said his position that women are trash? Yeah, he definitely treated like trash the young lady that asked for my help once. So.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What kind of situation was it that she needed help with? Did you not make correct?
You abused ex-girlfriend here in Louisiana. More than that, but she's an abused ex-girlfriend who felt very ill-used, and basically you said that Anglin treats women like trash, so that was pretty much what you told me.
Not just verbally, I guess. I mean, obviously he's very important because he's very popular and he's very smart and witty, and you know, there's a good reason for people to follow him. I think it's too bad he doesn't use it for a better purpose in terms of what I was talking about, the growth of the society and the, you know, bringing men and women together so they can reproduce and form a healthy society, rather than these people who read Anglin and say, well, women are trash, so I won't worry about the fact that I can't get a girlfriend.
Can you see the poster behind me? Not the Don't Tread on Me fly.
On the basis of sex. The one with the woman on it?
Yes. You don't know who that is?
Who is it?
That, believe it or not, is the actress playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Recognize her immediately, would you? This movie, I thought, was tremendously important. And I urge everybody on the right to see it, not unless you hate Ruth Bader Ginsburg and everything she stands for, but precisely if you do hate everything that she stands for, you need to see this movie and deconstruct it. Because it's fascinating what you just said about Andrew Anglin's attitude towards women. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is portrayed in this movie, anyhow, as the exact opposite of that. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is portrayed in this movie as, obviously, as the title suggests, a rather heroic woman, but also as a family woman, a devoted and loyal wife, a mother, you know, a woman who, whose relationship with her husband and her children was even more important to her than her career. And yet, of course, what it portrays accurately is her role in changing American society so that American society would not be that way anymore. Now, Aviala, do you know Margaret Hofstetler?
I don't know. Sure.
Aviala?
Nice to meet you, Aviala.
Likewise, it's a pleasure.
Anyhow, we already started talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Now, we had some technical problems. Are you hearing me okay this time, Aviala?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, I couldn't get Sean that day, but I got him the next day, and he immediately resolved the issue that I was just mixing my microphones wrong. So I think I've got that straightened out now. But I had the same poster up when we tried to record our last show about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I asked you what it was going to take to get you into a movie like this as the alt-right Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And you know, we've still got to address that issue. And I was just asking Margaret, you know, to sort of make some introductory comments about her perspective on women in the alt-right and the pro-white racially conscious movement. And she was saying that she thinks that one of the more negative forces in the movement right now, as far as women are concerned, is Andrew Anglin. It happens I have sort of weird personal knowledge of some of this, which I won't go into too much, but I do know one of his ex-girlfriends who once came to me looking for help. And I was just wondering, what is your perspective as we're getting started on women in this movement? I mean, you and Margaret are of different generations. Margaret's more of mine. You represent people. So what is your perspective on the present and future?
I apologize profusely. Right when you were beginning to elaborate on what her perspectives are regarding women in the movement, the last thing that I heard you say was her thoughts on women in the movement and what the particular problem is, and that's essentially all that I heard. It cut out after you said that. So I apologize profusely. There seems to have been a momentary technical glitch there. So if you wouldn't mind reiterating that.
Why don't you talk to Aviala? I mean, it's sort of mutual. You talk to her.
All that you missed basically, I think, is that I mentioned Andrew Anglin as a part of the problem with the, about the men in the alt-right movement, that I think his attitude is not helpful, to say the least.
Absolutely. I'm 100% in agreement with that assessment, and I've actually discussed the same criticism in that I think that a lot of the rhetoric revolving, especially around women in the movement, is a very particularly inflammatory and juvenile one that's only intended to garner attention towards certain figures that might have a more egotistical approach to these things and don't actually want to have a constructive discussion regarding the societal issues that we're facing. They instead want to gravitate all this attention towards themselves and sort of kind of perpetuate their own egotistical forms of entertainment, which happens to take the form of oftentimes a rather distasteful discussion of women. So I'm definitely in agreement with you on that point. I think that there is a lot of very juvenile rhetoric that's going on regarding that particular topic. And people discuss Anglin's work in particular as being one that is supposed to essentially kind of push the Overton window to the further right. And I can understand that sentiment, but I think the way that this is being demonstrated is not a productive one whatsoever when you're actually saying, even if you're saying it facetiously, to openly state that, you know, you think that women should be raped and locked in cages. I understand that it's facetious, but nevertheless, I do not consider that to be in any way, shape, or form constructive. So I'm in agreement with you.
Yeah, it tied in with something Charles and I was saying, Charles, about the larger societal issues of, you know, it coming from different ends, but they're both doing the same thing. I was saying schools teaching children that sex is for pleasure and entertainment and accepting gays and all this, and there's no basis of sex is about propagating society and building a society. They have no perspective on that, but it's the same thing with Anglin. You know, think outright, if it's pro-white, we want to build a society and have families and have children and have a, you know, blossoming population. And instead, he's pushing these, can't get a woman, and to say, good, I don't even want a woman. You know, how about that, you know, a movement towards a healthy society? Anyway, yes.
We haven't introduced the fourth member of the panel yet. Alison, from calling in from London, England. Do you know Margaret Hostickler? And I think you've been on with Aviale before, haven't you?
Yes. Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
I can hear you beautifully.
Alison and I are Facebook friends.
Yes. Nice to meet you face to face, Margaret, and nice to see you again, Aviale.
Well, I mean, the topic today, we're actually once again missing one of the key motivators who is Maren Heimbach. I hope she makes it.
She said that she will be online shortly. She was actually putting her kids down for a nap, so she said she will be on here in just a few moments. So
your kids down? That's terrible. She shouldn't do that.
Will Monica be here?
Anyhow, Alison, what's your perspective on the status of women? I mean, you're in England, you're in Europe, you're in a different world. And is it better or worse for women in the so-called alt-right or racially conscious nationalist movement these days?
Well, I don't want to give the impression of despair. I think that's
if it's appropriate, do. I mean, we're here about it.
I think it's counterproductive. I agree with what I heard from. How do I pronounce that correctly? Aviale. I agree with that. I was thinking about it when I received your invitation. That, you know, this. This woman bashing going on in the alt-right gives the impression that they are unable to form successful relationships with women. I think that's part of the globalist agenda in general. It suits them that there are these tensions between groups, not only between races but between the sexes as well. And in Europe, I would say that, you know, it's where it's where it kind of began, didn't it? We had the suffragette movement 100 years ago. They were considered to be the terrorists of the day. I've talked to my lawyers about this. They went against the grain. They were imprisoned. They went on hunger strike in prison. They were the first to commit one would say terrorist offences. You know, bombs and arson to get their agenda through. Pushed through. I think they were perhaps lucky in that, lucky is not the right word, not the right choice of word, but this happened directly after World War One, when, you know, a lot of men had simply disappeared or had been murdered in what was a mass slaughter of white men on both sides, as happened again 30 years later in World War Two. So they managed to get their agenda pushed through. And I saw a funny meme the other day. It was first wave feminine. I think it was Paul Fromm who posted it. First wave feminism, the woman with the fist. And then the second one, you know, we hate men, a big fat woman. And then the third one, it was we are men for the transgender. So the women bashing on the part of the Anglinites and these incel incel division, let's say, yes, rather counterproductive. They tend to forget that, you know, that they were born of women, their mothers are women. A friend told me something that might also add to the debate, is that a very knowledgeable gentleman, he said that men are in awe of women because women are always ready for the sexual act, whereas men need rest before they can start again. And he also told me that when men die, most of them say, "Mother, mother," whereas women, most of them, grit their teeth. So,
says, "Father, father."
Sorry?
And basically, no one dying says, "Father, father."
That's according to my very knowledgeable friend from Switzerland, yes.
Is he a psychologist?
Morocco called for her mother.
Who did?
The one of the girls who was killed in Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Horrible, horrible. Think about that. And that's has to do with the confrontation between the West and Islam. Pretty amazing aspect of all this, which maybe we can get into in a minute. So, I don't know, it's interesting. I mean, Emily Pankhurst was one of the great British suffragettes, right? And was she married?
I don't know.
Emily Pankhurst. I'm wondering, because Allison, before you came on, I don't think you were here when I was talking about this poster I've got behind me. I've used it as a prop for several talks right now. It's in marked contrast to the Don't Tread on Me flag. But have you seen or heard of this movie?
No.
On the Basis of Sex. It's the gigantic woman taller than the Supreme Court building here is none other than a totally unrecognizable actress playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think she's the oldest justice on the Supreme Court right now? I believe she is. And she certainly doesn't look like that anymore. But this was about her youth at a place where I spent a lot of time, namely Harvard and Cambridge, 02138, and her early existence there, and how she became who she is. But one of the fascinating things about it is that she was married from before she started law school. She actually had her first children while she was in law school. She was an extremely petite kind of a wheelie-like young lady, extremely beautiful and feminine, who, had a very good-looking husband who was also a lawyer a couple years ahead of her at Harvard, as a matter of fact. And the whole movie was about her life as a mother and wife in preparation for a career of tearing apart women as mothers and wives. And I thought it was absolutely fascinating to see this juxtaposition in the movie, that this was basically an ideal young lady of the 1950s, the mythological 1950s, becoming an icon of basically first, second, and third wave feminism in the legal system. And the movies have an amazing ability to mythologize these things. But what are they telling us? A young attorney for the Solicitor General, I believe, Office of the Solicitor General of the United States, who was opposing Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said, Well, the way we need to face this is we need to take her at her word that there are over 1,000 laws that discriminate on the basis of sex. And we need to show what would happen to America if all these 1,000 laws were repealed. And the proposals he made of what they could show were that women would be forced to work, they'd be forced out of the home, they'd be forced to work, and the children would come home to empty houses, the divorce rate would skyrocket, the family would be no more. Now, who was right? And what do we on the alt-right want to do about it? That's addressed to everybody. Don't all jump at once.
Yeah, it does seem as if she's accomplished the lot of her agenda.
Yes, she clearly has. And well, and I mean, another thing, I may or may not have mentioned this today, before, but around Christmas, a very good friend of mine who's a lawyer up from the West Coast, California and Idaho and Arizona, Nathan McPherson, came over here. And, you know, part of the New Orleans tour was doing the World War II Museum. And the World War II Museum here is if nobody's ever seen it, you know, you must come to New Orleans and see it, and I'm a good guy. It's an absolutely astounding propaganda piece for the brave new world. And part of the agenda, of course, is the promotion of women as, you know, are you familiar with the icon of Rosie the Riveter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we just take the United Kingdom, we have...
Before we go forward, Alison, I just want to introduce the fifth member of the panel. This is a brand new first. I believe this might be your. Is this your first time appearing on a podcast, Brooke Heimbach? You know Aviele. I'd like you to meet Margaret Hofstickler and Alison Shepler. Brooke has an amazing story of life on the alt-right, and that's why she's here. And she's really the inspiration for me for putting this particular on this particular day. And I've had trouble getting her on because she's got little children. She is living that old-fashioned life right now, or part of it, the wreckage of it, I should say. And so, Brooke, it's good to finally see you and good to have you on. Thank you very much. Go on.
Nice to meet you, Brooke.
Where is Brooke? Do I have to refresh the page? I can't see her.
You can't see her.
She just popped up for me.
She has.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have? Are you on speaker view or what are you on?
Live, just says live.
it doesn't tell you whether you're on speaker view or gallery view?
Gallery view. Yes, I can see Brooke now. Yes, okay. All the leaders, nice to meet you. All the leaders of the states within the United Kingdom are presided over by women. We have Theresa May in England, Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland, Leanne Wood. I'm not sure whether she's still there. I don't really follow the Welsh Assembly. And Arlene Phillips, I think she's called, in Northern Ireland. And we either have leaders who are women, or we have leaders in the style of, in Europe, talking about Europe, Macron, who's, you know, rather, who reminds me of Justin Trudeau, this kind of feminized, bloke with his
older handler.
And these people have been apparently primed from a very young age to take up this.
Margaret, we're having a little bit of trouble with your sound.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you're not coming in very clearly.
Okay, I'm going to find that.
Mark just now, but you weren't a second ago. I don't know what you're doing differently.
Okay, so is it okay now?
Yeah, just speak very slowly. That might be the big difference.
Okay. I just said Macron is an Obama-like figure in that way, that he was groomed for this role. Could you understand that?
Yes, it's fascinating to think about the concept of the Manchurian candidate coming out in a 1950s museum, movie rather, and now we're living the reality. I mean, I think movies are tremendously important. They shape so much of what we think and how the society at all understands it. Go on. Sorry. You're talking about the four women who lead the United Kingdom.
Yes, we also saw this New Zealand leader recently with the Christchurch shootings, a youngish woman. It's reputed that Obama's first lady is not, in fact, a lady. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on. Just to answer your original question about what's the situation in, I think it's pretty much the same all over the white world. And I lived in Denmark for a year. It was quite different from my experience of living in Switzerland, where it was a very traditional society, you know, a traditional culture there, people very, very proud of their origins. Living in Denmark, it reminded me, the culture there reminded me more of the culture in the United Kingdom. But again, this socialist paradise, they claim, has not bred good relationships between women and men. It's a disaster, and you know, it's the same everywhere. The white families, the middle class white families, move out of the areas where there are lots of immigrants to get their children placed in good schools. There's no such thing as a socialist paradise up there. I really didn't like it at all. I prefer my own country, even though there are similarities in the culture. Lots of flag waving, beer drinking, football. You know, they still have a royal family to cheer about. I think in general, for the free speech issue, that you still have the First Amendment. If you don't fight for that, then the same things that are happening in Europe to people like me will be happening also in America. One last thing before we hand over. I've been quite impressed with this comedian, Owen Benjamin, who's been rejected by Hollywood for his comments on Jewish power. He had quite a good, you know, quite an important career. He would entertain at some Academy Awards, and he's also a musician. And a very talented young man, but he's left all behind, but he has a big following, and I think he's quite an important leader and someone who's putting out a really positive message in contrast to these despairing messages that we're getting from other sections of the quote-unquote alt-right, that he has a family, he's encouraging people to do that and that, career or not, that is what young women, you know, and young men, need to do. Okay, it's a kind of fantasist idea because of the world we live in. But that is it. And can I just ask Miss Ginsburg there? She's one of the 33% of the Supreme Court, which is the Supreme Court. They're all 33% of the Supreme Court judges are Jewish. Is that correct?
At least they all seem separate issue.
0.2% of the population, but yet they comprise 33% of the judges on of the Supreme Court judges.
A huge percentage of Congress and
anti-Semitism. You can't say
what percentage of the president's family. I mean, we're all treated as like part of the royal family. It's a very strange world we live in. I don't know what to make of it. But Lauren, this is your very first appearance, and I want you to introduce yourself basically by telling everybody, why did I invite you, and why did I think that you would be an exceptionally good person to talk to about the status of women and the alt-right? First of all, how old are you, and how many children do you have?
Thank you.
This is not how we want our women to be. We want our women to be able to speak. were silent.
Still, thank you.
I thought we could hear it before.
Yes, we could, I think.
This is a very symbolic moment, folks.
Check your microphone.
Speak.
Are you talking? Do I need to call Sean?
Can't hear you, Brooke. Can't hear you. Your microphone muted?
Not on this end, it's not. Calling Sean. Sean, how you doing? I need you to get on 201-948-093 if it's possible. We have a mute speaker. We're doing White Women Worldwide, and we have a brand new speaker who's never been on a podcast, and she cannot speak. It's terribly symbolic. Her feminine power is being muted.
Can you hear my piano?
I hear it.
All Ranger Sean Donahue will be on shortly.
Where is Brooke? Where is Brooke? Why can't we hear her? Where is Brooke? Where is Brooke? Why can't we hear her?
948-093. And Allison's making up a new song about it. So
I don't think so. She's a mother.
She wants to
get on the show.
Where is Brooke? 093. Not exactly, but tell me if I hear it. What's happening to your phone
there?
I'm on the show right now.
Where is Brooke?
That's okay. They're trying to get sound back to one of the other guests.
I'm there. I saw you. Okay, Sean, you definitely don't fit in here.
Okay, that's what I'm doing. Okay,
thanks. Sean, Lauren Heimbach, I think you know everybody else on the show. Sean okay. Donahue, this is Lauren Heimbach. You know Allison, Awila, and Margaret.
Who am I trying to get on? Whoever. Can everybody hear me? Okay, great.
But all we right. Can't hear Brooke.
We can't hear Brooke. Okay. Put your mouse on the bottom. Like, move your mouse around the screen a little bit, and does the microphone pop up? Okay. When the microphone pops up, to the right of the microphone, there's a little up arrow. Do you see that? When you click on that up arrow, you should have a bunch of choices to choose speakers and microphones and whatnot. Whatever microphone you have chosen, is there another option there? Can you just choose the other one and then go back? Okay, let me ask you this. When you click on that up arrow next to the microphone, does the menu pop up that says select microphone, select speaker? Under select microphones, you have more than one choice. All right, two choices. Okay, is one of them same as system? All right, is that one click? All right, click on the other one.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
God is a genius. Thank you, Sean. Thank you.
All right.
I have more problems may happen, but thank you so much, Sean. Okay. Sean the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Without Sean, none of this would have ever happened. Anyhow, Brooke.
Yes, hi.
I think my question to you was, why did I invite you on here? How old are you, and how many children do you have?
I'm 25, and I have 2 children.
Hooray, bravo. How old are they?
Well, I hate to do this. I don't really like to discuss them publicly. Because of the stigma, and it just be a world of, you know, so...
You don't have to name them, but how old are they? I mean, that won't really identify them.
They're 2 toddlers. I have 2 toddlers, so my hands are full.
And do you have anything in your background which makes you kind of special and unique to the alt-right movement?
You asked me, why did you invite me on your show, and I'm really coming up empty, because I'm profoundly simple, actually. So,
Okay, where did you get... Okay, let's get a hint about this. Where did you get that last name?
Okay, well, there's that. That was, you know, my husband, my ex-husband. But, no...
Who would that have been? Can you name his name?
Matthew Heimbach.
His reputation precedes him.
Who said?
She said his reputation precedes him.
Indeed. Yes. Well, I mean that, and that's why. I mean, it sort of has put you in a kind of an unusual position here. I mean, you were basically trying to rebuild your life after one of the. I don't know how to put it delicately. One of the sleaziest scandals.
No. I'm sorry, please. I can't.
All right. Okay.
He's a good man. It's just the overwhelming pressures, and you know, we all have to stick together in this, and you know, I'm not gonna.
Okay.
It is what it is. It's just it's a very difficult situation for everybody involved.
How do you feel? I mean, you're obviously with us, so you're somewhat still involved in the movement, and you want to be involved in the movement, but how have you felt is your status as a woman?
Well, I think we've reached a very unique point in time where I have been treated overwhelmingly well in every interaction I've had with you know, everybody I've met, and, you know, when I've been going through difficult times, it's been movement people who have helped me, and have really been there for me, you know, and especially the women, and I think it kind of, it speaks to sort of the importance of women as the pillars of any society where, you know, if we're not involved, you know, whether we're wanted or not, if we're not involved, it naturally, any movement just dies, or it can't get started. You know, we're kind of the cogs in the machine, and you know, when we're treated well, we can function well. We can make or break anything. So I have been treated over the years. You know, I'm not necessarily, I've never been a figurehead, so this is actually very. To talk out loud about all this is very new to me. You know, I'm very much behind the scenes, you know, doing simple but important work.
Can you describe your work? Both work of women, the work you perceive. I mean, obviously raising children is perhaps important.
Yeah.
But it was always of that as a wife and a mother. Sort of by osmosis, I've picked up some of the more intellectual, theological, ideological pieces of what's going on. You know, why are white young men so frustrated? And I've been able to piece it together, but that's never, it's always been my role, and I have found more support and love as a wife and a mother out of anything I've ever done in my life.
And tell me about you said other women have been very supportive, but how about the men and have people given you advice about what's going on?
I'm sorry, can you
hear me?
a very good discussion, and we'll probably carry it on again on a future program. This is Paul Fromm, you're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
Days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord can